Greetings from Sri Vrindavan Dham. And I hope the food and the dust and the potency of Vraja somehow seeps through the cable and to all the places which you're residing. Rupa Goswami says, if you can't live in Vrindavan physically, then you can live in Vrindavan, then you should live in Vrindavan in your mind. So, thinking of absorbing yourself in something very, very much attaches you to that thing that you absorb yourself in, spiritually or materially. I was reading in the Bhagavatam today that there's one insect that catches a worm, and the worm, becoming so fearful and even hateful of the insect that's going to kill him, out of that emotion of the heart becomes so absorbed in that insect that actually its body becomes an insect. And the verse said, in a similar way, if we think of the Supreme Lord, we become transformed into our original spiritual natures. So if we think of Vrindavan, we actually become connected to Vrindavan in such a very, very powerful way. So I hope that these sanghas, besides the katha that's given, give people a chance to think of Vrindavan as their real home. As Prabhupada himself said, Vrindavan is my home. It's Prabhupada's home because it's Prabhupada's eternal residence. And it's also our eternal residence. So I hope that we can all think of Vrindavan. Now, in my... it's a codicy today, and I really didn't take much, so maybe my throat will be more choked up. But my inspiration today is just to get directly into the Krishna Katha. And perhaps within that katha, my own realizations will be shared, but just beginning the Krishna katha, I have a realization that I would like to share with you. And the purpose of this Krishna katha is by turning our consciousness towards Krishna, we naturally become attached to Krishna. And the more attached we become to Krishna, the more we can become absorbed in Krishna. And the more we become absorbed in Krishna, the more we become purified and perfected. Prabhupada probably gave such a nice definition of perfection. He said the original state of the living entity is called a devotee. So this term bhakta is not an ordinary term, devotee. It means perfection. Perfection or purity means the original state of something. But everything else external to the dharma or essence of that substance has been removed. When we become liberated from everything that's external to ourselves, we come to the state of being a devotee. So, the real key is developing liking or attachment to Krishna. I'm actually now, somehow in Vrindavan, studying and then teaching in the afternoon section in Sri Bhakti Sandarbha about Raghunuga Bhakti. Now, in one sense, it's an esoteric subject, but in another sense, it gives the core essence of devotional service. The core essence of devotional service is that we should worship Krishna, not just because it's an injunction or rule, but because we have a natural attraction for Krishna in our heart. And when we have a natural attraction for Krishna, we're much more absorbed in Krishna. So there's actually three things in spontaneous devotional service. There's the lobha, or the real sentiment of our eternal relationship with Krishna, our sarup. That's the goal. And then there's the ruchi, or taste for that. We may not have awakened our original nature, our original eternal relationship with Krishna, but we have an interest or a taste in that. And then the third platform is our taste for that hasn't even awakened in our heart. But Jiva Goswami says a very interesting thing that I think is the key to Krishna consciousness. He says, even if you don't have an interest or taste, you should try to mix a liking or taste into your activities. And let me give you an example. You're chanting Hare Krishna, but it's obligatory. You're only doing it because you vowed. And therefore, you pull down the beads. And when 16 beads are pulled down, then you say, yes, there's some benefit from this. I have followed my vow. So the benefit you get is from the injunction or rule and not the activity, because your consciousness wasn't so much in the activity. But then you start to think, no, I should put my consciousness into this activity some way or another, because unless there's some natural attachment or liking, it will be very hard to become absorbed in my chanting. And without being absorbed in my chanting, the benefit will not be so substantial as if I'm absorbed. So absorption means some emotion. So how do you add emotion to your practices when there's no liking or taste yet developed for Krishna? Well, here's one way, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends this. You can even say, I have no devotion. I have no taste. And feel very, very humble. Now, when you say you have no devotion, it means you want devotion. Because at least you've understood it's the goal. And by adding that type of mood or devotion, there will be some rag or attachment or absorption. The key in spiritual life is one way or another, add some emotion to the activity. Because it's only through some emotion or some feeling that we can actually remain absorbed. In fact, I'm reading today in the same section, highlighting how this absorption from Krishna is the purifying factor in our spiritual practices, and how a feeling or emotion actually leads to absorption. It says, even, it gave the example of Sishupal, even he was inimical. He had spontaneous hate for Krishna. How did he have spontaneous hate for Krishna? When he was a child, even before he could speak properly, he was cursing Krishna in broken language. Krishna, the bad, bad, bad person. Krishna, no good Krishna. So it meant, it was so natural in him, It was so natural to him. But before, he wasn't even trained or practiced or had even any reason to hate Krishna. It was coming right from his birth, and that. But because it was an emotion, he was focused on Krishna. And because he was focused on Krishna, when finally Krishna killed him, he was liberated. Krishna tolerated 199 insults. And the 100th insult, he finally took out his Sudarshana Chakra and cut off Sishupal's head. And then everyone was amazed. This person who had maximum enmity for Krishna, maximum envy for Krishna, was merged into the body of Krishna. So the point was, and it's not recommending enmity, and in fact, it gave the example of King Vena, who hated Krishna, who hated God and went to hell. Because with King Vena, when you're not Sishupal, this was coming, you know, the Vijay, and Jai and Vijay, it comes from so many births. It's very something special. But if we hate God, we forget God. And then if we curse God, we're not absorbed in it. We're absorbed in ourselves as the idea of control and enjoy it, and we go to hell. So we can't imitate this. But the example is given to show how powerful is absorption in Krishna, and it's natural, it comes from the heart. It's not just imposed by something external, like like an obligation or a duty or a rule. So this is the key to spiritual life. And one of my objectives in sharing with you Leela, either I said I'm going to do Krishna Leela and then rotate when I finish one Krishna Leela, perhaps do Gaur Leela, is to somehow invoke this attachment in us. I'm doing it for myself. Because when you speak Krishna Katha and you hear the pastimes of Krishna in these wonderful stories, and you become absorbed in Krishna, his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, this liking develops for Krishna. And when that liking develops for Krishna, and we become absorbed, and rapidly we become purified. And purification also means happy, because it's the nature of the self. So now let's go with today's verse and try to absorb ourselves in Krishna. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text 6. I said I wasn't going to give an introduction, but I did. I'm hopelessly addicted. Introduction. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ete Venas Tapyasho Kila Loka Tirtham Sayanta Adi Purushanu Patam Vajante Svayo Avi Munigana Bhavadiya Mukhya Udham Vane Pina Jahat Nanukat Vadaivam. Our original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours. So they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place to the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinful one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnana Yudhana Salakaya Taksu and Mukam Yena, Tadmai Si Gurave Nama, Iche Tanya Mno Vistam, Tapitam Yena Bhutale, Shayam Rupa Tadhamayam, Tadati Sapadantikam, Abhidana Sinundante, Idam yache puna puna Srimadrupa padam boja Vivisham janma janmani Vairagya yuvbhakti visampayatnai Apayamam anabhitsamandam Vipambuhiya paradukaduki Janakastam pravamastriyami Ancha kalpa pirubhyascha Kripa sindhu vaibhacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vidadhar Shirasade Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just before I begin, I do like to give some taste of Vrindavan. The devotees from the ashram at 26 Second Avenue, Gadadhar Pandit, Bhakta Joe and Bhakta Michael are here, and I've been taking them on parikram, and we went yesterday to spend the morning at the Radha Damodar Mandir. Just speaking about Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. So that's nice. Now here, in this particular verse, which we should really try to get in the mood, as you remember, this story begins as Krishna takes up the cows in Vrindavan. We all know that, we don't all know, but Krishna has many cows. He has 108 herds of cows. 25 of the herds are red colored. They have cows' names like Rukta, Aruni. 25 herds of the cows are white. They have names like Shukla. 25 are yellow. They have names like Pingala. 25 herds are black. They have names like Dhamma and Kala, and then there's 8 herds that have different colors, and Krishna with his transcendental flute climbs up on the Tarakadipa tree and blows his flute to actually call the different cows, because the nature of Krishna's flute is he carries the emotion, the desire, and the sentiments and the love in his heart for his devotees, and he can direct that through his flute by different sounds and communicate it to different areas. He can call the cows of Vrindavan. Now, Krishna, this story begins, it's very significant. I mentioned before that this is when significant point where Krishna is given care of the cows. He had the calves. The calves can't go far from home. I mentioned that. And therefore, they're suitable for the young boys who are between 1 and 5 Kumar, who can't wander off into the forest all day by themselves. They can't wander far, and they can't go away from their mothers for a long time. The calves have to come immediately back for they can't be away from the cows for very long. So now Krishna's taking the cows into the forest of Vrindavan. So the first thing that's significant in this particular pastime of the killing of Bainatasura is that we are introduced to the forest of Vrindavan, which facilitates Krishna's pastimes. And we can see the relationship that this forest of Vrindavan is, the word is the heart to Kaman. When Krishna desires to enjoy, there's a suitable environment that manifests to facilitate his enjoyment. An environment that's full of color beautiful sights, wonderful sounds, fragrances, etc. All the necessary natural accoutrements to create the environment where the heart opens for loving enjoyment, loving exchanges to flow, which is the existential basis of enjoyment, because it's God's own shakti or potency for enjoyment, the pleasure potency, which is love of Godhead. So we can see when Krishna desires to enjoy loving relationships, he goes to the forest of Vrindavan and he blows his flute out of joy, seeing that forest of Vrindavan, which is exclusively moving for his pleasure by stimulating his senses with the intention to please those senses. But he's also experiencing through them the love, eternal abode for him. Even when you come to Vrindavan, where Prabhupada said, come 3 days or 3 years, he said that because it's a place for service. So if you're not very advanced, you can come for a shorter time and be determined and keep in your consciousness the fever of service, even though it's not our natural condition. And then Prabhupada said 3 years, because then you should fix yourself in some service. So Krishna becomes so enlivened. And because it's a loving exchange, he not only blows his flute out of joy, but he blows his flute to express his love for his transcendental ode. And he's naturally with his associates, the cowherd boys, and they're doing kirtan. And they're going to enter Vrindavan, which is providing all flowers and fruits and all nourishment for his cows. And we see that forest of Vrindavan, even its clear lakes. If you look at the lakes of Vrindavan, you can practically see to the bottom because they're so clear. And the clear lake is a service to the mind. Because if the mind wants to enjoy, the mind has to be peaceful. So the Vrindavan lakes is Krishna's glancing at the Vrindavan lakes and looking at the Vrindavan lakes with their beautiful lotus flowers and the buzzing bees and the air blowing over the water, carrying the sweet moisture of the lakes mixed with the fragrance of all the beautiful flowers, offering to Krishna's body the loving sentiments of taste and fragrance. Krishna enters the forest of Vrindavan. And then, I'm getting up to today's verse, we begin to see what are the residents of Vrindavan, even the non-moving living entities. They're opulent, but they're humble. Because they're humble, they're given all opulence to serve Krishna. This is the key to Krishna consciousness. This is even the key to Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna wants us to give us the opulences to serve him. But unless we're humble, those opulences won't be used for service, but they'll be used for ourselves and only increase our false ego and attachment and ignorance. But in Vrindavan, what do you see? You see stately trees with such luscious fruits, and these fruits have such nice fragrance. I remember once when I went to Italy, which is considered the garden of Europe, and somehow coming from India, I became actually deathly ill. And I couldn't eat for about 7 days. And then finally, they brought me the fruit. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes.
Thank you so much. And when they brought me these fruits, I think it's something special about this country and the fruits. But I couldn't believe the fragrance of these fruits. Because, you know, digestion, to really enjoy food, first there has to be fragrance and there has to be color. And that stimulates the taste buds and the flavor of digestion. That's why in Vor Lila, whenever you see it, describes when Raghava Pandit's sister, Damayanti, was cooking her wonderful things for Krishna, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were sugandha, very fragrant. So if you can envision Krishna now blowing his flute, please keep in mind, what does his golden garment look like, and his shama color, and his lotus eyes, and his smile, which is coming almost to the sides of his eyes. And he's blowing his flute, and he's enjoying, and before him are all these wonderful herds of cows of so many different colors, and the white dust of Vrindavan, like talcum, coming up, and he's blowing his flute. And as he's walking, there are stately trees which are full of flowers, they're full of fruits, they're colorful, they're fragrant. But because the nature of love is humility, to relish love, humility is required. And not only is humility required, but the consciousness moves down to experience the love and mercy. So therefore, we see the wonderful place where there's opulence galore, but a mood of love, humility, and service. And as Krishna's walking through the forest, all these trees are bending to the lotus feet of Krishna to the extent that the branches of the trees with their red flowers are touching Krishna's lotus feet, almost to announce that my flowers and the color of my red flowers are nothing compared to the shining red lac of your lotus feet, Krishna. So this is Vrindavan. And then Krishna, he wants to reciprocate with the trees by glorifying their wonderful mood of devotion. Their devotion with their opulences and their paraphernalia offered to his lotus feet. But because Krishna himself is a lover of his devotees and is relishing that love, he himself wants to be in the humble mood in Vrindavan. Not that he wants to be so great, so far, so distant, that people can only appreciate him from afar, but he wants to be close with his devotees. And therefore, he wants to be controlled by the love of his devotees. So Krishna himself wants to reciprocate with the trees. But rather than announce his own glory, he's going to glorify the trees as if they're making these offerings to Balaram. So he tells Balaram, see how the trees are bowing down. See how these trees are bowing down to your feet. Greatest of all, see how they're bowing at your lotus feet. But the fact that they are bowing to your lotus feet, the fact that they are filled with love, makes them worshipable by even the demigods, which are the controllers of this earth. This is actually the most, look how glorious these trees are. That they're loving, they're offering everything to you. And then Krishna is seeing these trees, and he's understanding, look at their love, and look at their devotion, and how this utter love and devotion, this experience of Krishna's mercy, this experience of Krishna's glory, satisfies and fills one so much that that love in the person's heart increases. And when that love or desire increases, somehow or other their hunger for Krishna increases. And therefore they're seeking, because hunger means want. Hunger means lack, but they're thinking, I don't have any love for Krishna. So as one's love for Krishna increases, one's hunger for Krishna increases, and one's sense that he doesn't have love for Krishna increases. So Krishna is looking at these trees, and he understands that they're devotees, and he's revealing rule. He's saying, these trees, Balarama, offering you fruits, eradicate the darkness of ignorance that had caused their birth as trees. They're thinking, although Krishna is, how can a tree be sinful in Vrindavan when even Lord Brahma prays, when Uddhava prays, let me take birth. Lord Brahma has the highest position in the universe, the most pious living entity. When you perform the Vanashram system perfectly for thousands and thousands of births, you may have the Sukriti to be Lord Brahma. You're the most pious entity in the pious living entity in the universe, but Lord Brahma is praying to be just a creeper or bush, not even a tree, less than a tree in Vrindavan. So these trees are so pious. And they have the association with Krishna because it's not that they're a tree in one part of the forest of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a transcendental realm beyond time and space. And Krishna is reciprocating and satisfying fully, simultaneously, all the residents of Vrindavan. But he's still thinking, look at these trees. They're thinking, I cannot move. I am so unfortunate. The gopis and the other living entities and the parrots, they all can, the parrots, they all can, and the deer, they all can run, the birds, the beasts, the water, Jamuna, everything can move towards Krishna. Due to my impiety, I am stationary. And therefore, let me now in this life, now that I finally had this opportunity that Krishna is passing by, let me offer him everything to remove the ignorance that has prevented me from being able to attain him. I'm just stationary as a tree. When I was thinking of the parrots, I was thinking of Vrindavan, because Vrinda Devi has 60,000 parrot disciples who assist her by flying over Vrindavan to oversee the places in Vrindavan to arrange for Krishna's pastimes. And I was thinking, when I thought parrots, I thought that on Thursday I do go to Vrindavan. Many of you know a very wonderful Vaishnavi in Vrindavan, very special devotee, Daivi Shakti, and her daughter will get married on that day at Vrindavan. Maybe you know there's a devotee, and he was in Boston named Goloka Vrindavan, and I couldn't think of Goloka Vrindavan. And he's also, they're getting married there in Vrindavan. So I was just thinking, because I know her when she was just born, very nice, pretty bossy girl, nesting parents. But yes, I was thinking Vrindavan and those parrots. Now, today's verse is about moving living entities in Vrindavan. And he's still talking to Balaram in this Sakyaras. Krishna's exchanging, and he says, Adi Purush, my old great personality. Now he says, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours. They must be Muniganat, great sages, Bhavadhyam, look at the most intimate of your devotees. Why? They are worshiping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories. So, so nice. This actually shows you a great sage is not silent. The great sage is worshiping Krishna, and he's following Krishna, and when he's following Krishna, he's loving Krishna. And how do you follow and love Krishna? You follow and love Krishna by chanting his glories, which are tirtha. Why are Krishna's glories the ultimate tirtha? Because what does tirtha mean? Tirtha means the means for crossing beyond material existence. And simply by hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord, by chanting them, one immediately comes to the spiritual platform beyond material existence. Thus, the transcendental glories of the Lord have been described as tirtha. This is actually a fact. With his chanting of the Lord, it becomes a dham, a holy place. The difference between Vrindavan and a temple, it's the difference between an embassy and the country. When you go to Delhi, at least years and years ago, in Vrindavan was so, it was one car, no phones, hardly any electricity. And then when I go to the American embassy and the people and the water fountain with cold water, it was just like America. It was not different than America. But there was a difference. The difference is that the embassy depended on the activities of the people there to be America, where the country America was independent of the people there. It was constitutionally so-called America. So similarly, the difference between the Holy Dham, and Vrindavan is that the difference between the Holy Dham and the temple is they're not different. If people are chanting the Lord's glories, then that becomes Vrindavan. But the difference is Vrindavan is Vrindavan regardless of the external activities. And the places outside Vrindavan are dependent on those activities. Another example can be given of, let's say, if water, it would, analogy of water, or let's say if you have some land and the land is below sea level, it is naturally irrigated. And let's say you have a high land, and you bring water up there and you irrigate it, then there's no difference between the high and the low land. But the low land is naturally irrigated. So Vrindavan is naturally Krishna conscious. But here, the place, the greats are like sages, and they're following. So imagine Krishna going through the forest. The trees are bowing down, offering all their opulence. The cowherd boys are singing. The cows are coming through the beautiful forest. All the elements of Vrindavan are carrying the sensuous offerings of Vrindavan to please Krishna. And the bees now are following. So Krishna is saying that the moving living entities, I think someone has a speakerphone on, so they have to mute their phone because I'm hearing the reverberation. Now, though you have disguised yourself within this bar, he's coming not as the Supreme Lord, but as a cowherd boy. And it's not actually a very high social position to be a cowherd boy. But still, as great devotees, they worship Krishna with and chant his glories as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he appears in a human-like form. So these beings, they're like great sages. What do great sages do? They recognize Krishna, and they find Krishna, and they chant his glories. And they refuse to abandon Krishna, and they follow him into the forest. Actually, in this story of Sishupal, it's very, very interesting what happens. Is the reason why he's so upset with Krishna is because the reason he's so upset with Krishna is because when I actually fasted today, so I think I'm a little too much vata. But when he when there was the kings, the Rajasiya sacrifice. So what is the nature of the kings? The nature of the kings is when they come to the Rajasuya sacrifice, they would be offered Abhishek. Their feet would be bathed with all substances, because the king invokes servitude in them. So therefore, the king is Vishayi. He exhibits great enjoyment for his service. The accoutrements of power. He has crown jewels. He has harems, etc. He's showing, I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. And therefore, the citizens, by nature, they worship him. And therefore, with that service attitude, he can control them. So the kings are always worshipped. So when Sishupal saw in the assembly of the Rajasuya, Yudhisthira had to pick who is the most exalted person. First of all, Yudhisthira knew this is so sensitive. So what did Yudhisthira do? He consulted with everyone, and everyone talked among themselves, and they decided, oh yes, Krishna is the most exalted. So then when Sishupal heard this, he was already envious. And he stood up in the assembly, and these Kshatriyas are great speakers, and they're very convincing. And he stood up in the assembly, and he said, you have made Krishna the topmost person in this assembly? Krishna? He said, how is that possible? We have the greatest kings in the world. This person is a Gwala. Gwala means Gowala. It means the person who takes care of the cows. And actually, the Gwala you see in India, the Gwala, even though he's kind of a Vaishya, he's less than a Sudra, he says. Because they're with animals and their consciousness is animal-like. How can you make the Gwala the topmost person in this assembly? This is the greatest insult. And what has he accomplished? Oh, he's so powerful, he killed one snake. And when he was young, he killed a woman who was his nurse. And he lifted up some porous pebble. How can... And because the nature of convincing talk, the people started to shake their heads like, yes. He was starting to actually convince people. One time I went with Dina Bandhu on Parikram, and when we came to Krishna Kund, which is in the middle of the Gahavan forest, which is Rairani's garden, there's one little house there which has a veranda. And we saw the most famous sadhu in Braj sitting there with all these simple Brijvasis watching television. So we looked at what was happening. And this sadhu was so renounced. One of my friends once stayed with him. The sadhu, though, speaks perfect English. He came about 50 years ago, but he was very educated. Famous sadhu. And he revealed to my friend, and I've met him also, he doesn't want to hear anything of the material world. He wants to forget it completely. But he moved on top of this hill in Mangar, doesn't want to meet anybody, and he's serious. He wants to forget all names, everything, and just meditate on Radha and Krishna. He wants to forget his identity with the body. And my friend, he was up there for a week, and he just asked him, he said, no, I forget everything. So he revealed to my friend that the last news he ever heard in the material world was that Marilyn Monroe died. So here it was, this famous sadhu, he was watching television. He had little children on his lap. He's a very nice sadhu. And I saw they were watching Krishna that was on television. And it was so amazing because when the commercials came on, the TV was immediately shut and it was kirtan. And what were they watching? It was this scene of Krishna and Balaram in the wrestling arena. And it was so well done, Krishna and Balaram. And then these huge wrestlers walked in. They were so powerful. And then Kamsa's sitting on the throne. And then Akura Vasudev. Please, again, there's a speaker reverberation, so please mute the phone. So what happened is that Akura stands up, or one of Krishna's associates, and starts saying, these are young boys, and these are powerful wrestlers like a mountain. This is not fair. And the Sanskrit word for not fair, again, is a reverberation. The Sanskrit word for not fair is anyaya. It means not logical. So he says, anyaya, anyaya, this is unfair. And then you look at the audience, and you know, it's this stadium filled with all these, you know, people from Vataran things, and they're, you know, 5,000 years ago, and they're all starting to say, anyaya, 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 this is not fair, this is not fair. And then you see Kamsa, and he's looking around, and he's getting really worried, because he thinks there could be a coup d'etat. And you can see he's nervous and getting passionate. And then Kamsa stands up. His Kshatriya is very powerful. He stands up, he said, anyaya, unfair? He said, this boy just, one stroke of his hand, untouched the giant elephant Kuliapita and smashed him. This boy killed a huge python whose jaws was up to the sky. And with the pinky of his left hand, he lifted up a huge mountain. You think it's anyaya? It's nyaya, nyaya. And then the wrestling match began. But I saw when Vasudev was speaking how this was not fair. Everybody's shaking their heads. The same thing with Sishupal. Everyone was shaking their heads. But then Krishna just took the Sudarshan and killed him. Now one more verse, and this is the most beautiful verse. Bear with me. We'll just go a few more minutes. Such a beautiful verse. So Krishna now is describing Vrindavan. O worshipful one, these peacocks are dancing before you out of joy. These doe are pleasing you with affectionate glances, just as the gopis do. And these cuckoos are honoring you with vain prayers. All these residents of the forest are most fortunate, and their behavior towards you certainly befits great souls receiving another great soul at home. Very interesting. What is a great soul? Satam Nisarga. The nature of a great soul is that they welcome other great souls properly. And how do they welcome other great souls properly? The nature of saintly persons. And we emulate saintly persons because we are sadhakas. And what a sadhaka means, or a practitioner, it means is that he follows those who are perfect according to his own capacity to do so. So the nature of saintly persons is they offer whatever they possess to another great personality who has come to visit them. So this verse shows that nature. And for the satisfaction of one who has arrived at one's home, one offers him various things that are of one's own that are excellent. So according to one's nature, each person possesses different excellences. And when you love someone, you offer what is best. And often what you can offer with the most love is what you think is best. I gave this example one time, is if you go to a Gujarati's home, they offer dhokla. If you go to a Punjabi's home, they offer chana and bhaturi roti. If you go to an Italian's home, they offer you pasta and pizza. If you go to a Bengali's home, they offer you shukta. Generally speaking, because they love you, they'll offer what's best, and what they think is best is what they like as best. Of course, there's another sense of offering where you find out what the person wants, but in one sense, that will be the best, because ultimately what one enjoys is love. And if I go to a Gujarati's home, I want them to make Gujarati prasad, because that's what they think is best, and that's what they can offer in the most enthusiasm and love. If you go to a Bengali's home, you want them to offer... One thing is because you want to offer to Krishna what you can do best. And therefore, if someone is a singer, he wants to offer song to Krishna. If one is a poet, he wants to offer choice words to Krishna. If one is a carpenter, he wants to make an altar for Krishna. So same thing, the nature of Vrindavan is there are excellences possessed by different entities. So what is the excellence of a peacock? The excellence of a peacock, it's a beauty and dancing. So he's saying to Balaram, look at the peacocks who are dancing before you. So and the doe? What can the doe offer? Well, the doe has beautiful eyes that can offer sidelong glances, just as the gopis do. And the cuckoos, what can they offer? Their beautiful song. So these residents of Vrindavan are most fortunate. Because what is the most fortunate thing? The most fortunate thing is that you have something that you can offer to Krishna with love. Because the most fortunate thing is love. And the most fortunate thing is being able to please the object of your love with love. And when one actually has love, then he tries his hardest to make things very fine and pleasing for the senses of his beloved. So he paints nicely, he cooks nicely. So this is Vrindavan offering all the opulences to Krishna. I guess that's what I have to offer today on Ekadasi. So thank you all very much for coming to the Sangha today. And hopefully we got a little taste of Raj.